Good morning. I grew up as a boy at a time when the public knew little about gender variance and when the term transgender hadn't even been coined. I remember feeling more connected to girls than to boys and having conversations in which I admitted to friends that it would have been fine with me if I'd been born a girl. As I grew up, I increasingly felt that being pigeonholed as a boy was unsatisfactory, in that it led to people making incorrect assumptions about me. But I don't remember thinking that there was any possible remedy to my predicament. For most of my childhood, I was small, and that, plus some feminine mannerisms and my having gravitated to playing the flute in school, led to bullying. It was a relief to escape into adulthood and college. In my early 20s, I found myself making tentative steps toward presenting in a way that was more authentic. Sadly, though, my girlfriend, who I went on to marry, was extremely upset by my steps toward presenting more femininely. She was older than me, and I was desperate for our relationship to be a success, and so I abandoned my attempt at living more authentically. 2 decades later, though, when I reached my 40s, dissatisfaction with the gendered aspects of my life, combined with greater confidence and experience, led to my making another attempt at gender transitioning. And this also marked the beginning of the end of my marriage. Initially, my goal was claiming an identity and developing a presentation that was not male, as opposed to being female. I simply didn't want to be pigeonholed as a man anymore. Looking back, I think that I didn't have the nerve or vision to imagine I could ever transition to being a woman. But I remember finding it unclear even what being a man or being a woman really meant. I came to think of myself as intergender, as neither male nor female, and learned that there were others attempting to live outside the gender binary, calling themselves genderqueer, androgene, or intergender. We conceptualized ourselves as being in the middle of a gender spectrum, with male at one end and female at the other. At the time, I thought that I could find comfort and acceptance through a combination of changes in presentation and helping others to understand that not everyone is male or female. As time went on, I came to see gender as a collection of attributes, how nurturing a person is, how aggressive they are, their kind of body language, how they use physical space, how much space they take up, etc. Looking at gender this way, I came to the realization that male and female, or man and woman, aren't really genders, because there exist men and women who, if one looks only at their gender attributes, ignoring their physical form, are the same. Instead, I came to see male and female, man and woman, as gender labels or brands masquerading as actual genders. Because gender attributes don't correlate in a systematic way, for example, knowing that someone is nurturing doesn't actually tell us whether they might be aggressive or not, I came to see gender as a multidimensional space rather than a simple continuum. It's a myth, I would argue, that men and women are fundamentally different. Yes, if one measures some gender attribute, like aggression for men and women, or biological males and biological females, one typically gets averages that are slightly different. And that's typically what the press emphasizes. But the male and female bell curves, normal distributions for that attribute, will mostly overlap. I actually thought about bringing a graphic today, but if you imagine bell curves that are almost superimposed, that's the reality for most gender attributes. And that shows that there's much more within sex difference than there is intersex difference. It turns out that living outside the gender binary is very hard, and I learned this firsthand. For one thing, every time people use gendered pronouns, she, her, and he, him, when describing intergender people, it pushes them back into binary boxes. That's simple. Those simple speech acts are making a statement about people, how you don't accept their understanding of themselves. There are gender-neutral pronouns. See, that's S-I-E. Think of seeing, so that's the mnemonic. And hear, that's H-I-R, think of hearing. Those aren't the only ones, but they've got a great mnemonic, and so as a teacher, I like them the best. As in, see walk so quietly that it would be easy for hear to sneak up on me. But people seem, in my experience and other people's experiences, either unwilling or unable to actually use them. Academics are great at learning things like this and being totally unwilling to put them into practice. Another problem is that public restrooms and similar facilities are gendered. And every time an intergender person walks into the men's room or the women's room, sees put back in a binary box. And so I think there is a real need for more gender-neutral restrooms and similar facilities. Furthermore, life is just lonely for people trying to live outside the gender binary because they don't have access to the brand-based solidarity of being a man or being a woman. There isn't that kind of camaraderie. And so life is hard living outside the gender binary. But maybe the biggest problem of all is that we're all conditioned from infancy to reduce people's genders to their assumed biological sexes. We look at someone, possibly you've been doing it during the service, and in an instant make all kinds of assumptions about that person's sex and therefore how they are or how they should be. In my case, despite all the changes I was going through, people continued to see me as a man. It was just impossible to escape from that, albeit they saw me as an increasingly unusual one, which, you know, is not necessarily a positive. So like many people who tried to find a home outside the gender binary, I found eventually that living in that space was simply unsustainable. Along the way, though, I found to my amazement that it was no longer a stretch to think of myself as a woman, to imagine claiming that identity and role. It became clear that in our binary gender system, the only satisfactory home for me was as a woman. And I found, to my even bigger surprise, that I wanted to undergo bodily changes through hormones and surgery, both to achieve more acceptance as a woman, but also to feel comfortable with my own body. I think that part of what once made it difficult for me to imagine transitioning to being or living as a woman was a fear that I would be unable to reliably pass. And today, I find that passing isn't even really my goal anymore. I just want to fit in well enough that my day-to-day existence isn't a struggle, that I'm culturally intelligible. And I'm happy to say that things have worked out for me, that I feel like my life as a trans woman is a good and a stable one. But I feel still that gender is more complicated than the gender binary, and I continue to hold out hope for a future in which people's full, unique genders are recognized. As part of my own development along these lines, because I've been socialized just like everyone else, I've been making a conscious effort to see past people's bodies, to pay attention to how people really are in terms of gender. And I think it's working. I think I'm seeing people differently than I used to, seeing essences instead of what's on the surface. And so I hope that today's service will help some of you to better see people's gender essences, as this is the first step toward moving to a future in which people's genders aren't reduced to their bodies.
Well, I want to thank Ali for the great conversations we've had in preparation for this morning and previous to this, and for sharing her journey so openly with us. And as you heard, one of the things that we discussed was introducing the congregation to the use of gender-neutral pronouns as an experiential entrance into this non-binary space. And so I'm going to use gender-neutral pronouns in my reflection and through the remainder of the service. And there are various versions of it, but I'm going to use the ones that Ali pointed out. See replacing he or she, here replacing his or her, and herself replacing himself or herself. And I recognize that this may seem artificial, as I'm not accustomed to it, and most of us are not accustomed to it. And it may seem artificial because it's only for these next few minutes. There isn't going to be an ongoing requirement that I or anyone else use gender-neutral pronouns for in the worship services. But if even for a few minutes, if we can begin to glimpse and imagine a different way of hearing and perceiving other than what is habitual, then that's still meaningful. When I was a seminary student, one of my Unitarian Universalist peers organized a public conversation at Harvard Divinity School featuring a panel of individuals, all of whom lived a gender expression that did not fit into either end of the gender binary. The organizer was herself, a gender rebel, a transgendered lesbian who dressed in male drag, who wore her locks in long red waves down her back, here back, and supported and sported a red goatee. The panelists were not men who had transitioned to become women, or women who had transitioned to become men, but were people who had rejected the binary categories them altogether, who recognized that their gender was too complex and fluid to be considered exclusively male or female, and who were living in that multidimensional intergendered space. Inevitably, they appeared to many people who encountered them as strange and as discomforting gender enigmas. One of the panelists was the gorgeous and colorful Craig Hickman, a performance artist who described herself as man enough to let hear women shine and woman enough to let hear man roar, and who, when confronted with the frequent question of whether C was a man or a woman, would answer, "Isn't beautiful enough?" I want to try to express what happened in the room that evening and what it has come to mean to me spiritually and ethically. The event was very successful in that there were probably about 200 people there. The panelists were so honest, each spoke so genuinely about her emergence, her struggle and personal journey of living into a unique gender expression because it was the only authentic choice that could be made. And the audience, those who had gathered to listen and learn, to support, to witness, to ask questions and share thoughts, they brought such deep open-heartedness to their listening and their witnessing that as the discussion progressed over the next hour or so, the room began to bloom with the energy of love. I don't quite know how to describe this except to say that a field of love energy began to hum in the room, a warm, shimmering field that was so palpable, so thick that it seemed you could cut it with a knife. Perhaps you have experienced such a phenomenon at some time in your life, maybe many times. I felt it in this space at times. Now, I know this was to some extent a subjective experience, and I'm not sure, in fact, I can be fairly sure that there were others who didn't experience it the way that I did or wouldn't describe it in that way. But when it was over, I did ask Lori, the person who had organized the event, "Did you feel what I felt? Did you feel how thick the love was in the room?" And Lori assured me that she had felt the same thing happen. My own spiritual journey has been guided by such experiences, and I trust that they are real and that they call to be understood, and that is how I stay on track and how I know when I'm not. The point I want to make here is not that I had a spiritual experience and isn't that cool, but why? What happened? Everyone in the room was invited to let the boxes of gender labeling fall away. We weren't asked to do that explicitly, but simply by the nature and subject of the conversation, by the authentic presence of the panelists themselves, and by the presence of the many transgendered people who were in the audience that night. We were encountering individuals who did not fit the norms, and after a while, you have to stop trying to figure it out. You just stop wanting to figure it out, because the mystery and the uniqueness and the beauty of the individual person is enough. So as our conditioned expectations of male and female, what it means to be a man and what it means to be a woman, as those expectations dissolved away, and as the mental frameworks dissolved, a lucid, undefended perception began to open up in the space. Eyes and ears and hearts fully open to mutual witnessing that was not obstructed by preconceptions. And in that openness, the field of love bloomed. And this was a formative event in my life because it showed me the extent to which gender categorizing one another shuts down our full perception of each other. The extent to which gender labels and all the preconceptions that come with those labels maintain barriers to actual perception and encounter. When we see or encounter someone, their gender is one of the primary things that must immediately and unconsciously be established in order to make sense of that person. Race is another immediate observation. It's one of those immediate things, but I think for all the complexity that race means for us in our society, at least we can accept more racial fluidity than gender fluidity. We understand, especially in a multiracial urban environment, that there are many, many subtle variations and shades to those characteristics that we call race. But if we don't instantly recognize a person's gender, we are immediately arrested and confused, because we live in a social consciousness in which there are only two acceptable categories. Well, in Unitarian Universalism, based upon our first principle of affirming the inherent worth and dignity of every person, we strive to see each other fully, as full human beings. We strive to allow ourselves and each other to grow into full authenticity and self-expression. Can we really do that when the gender binary construct has an almost absolute hold on our thinking and seeing? What if we were able to loosen that construct and give each other more space, more fluidity, and see in ourselves and one another more subtle variations? In my preparations this morning, I came across this little quote from the classical scholar Gilbert Murray. "See truth and light where they may be found, and where reason fails, use well the fainter powers of surmise and sensitiveness, and above all, walk gently in a world where the lights are dim and the very stars wander." It's this last image that I particularly love, that we move through a world where the very stars wander. We want those constellations to be fixed. We need that pole star to stay solidly north, or else we'll lose our way. But the quote suggests that in order to find truth, sometimes we have to walk very gently and very sensitively, seeking subtler guidance. We have to allow that the expected anchors are not so fixed, and let go of the habitual reference points that have always ordered our reality. Or else we cannot learn or see all the subtleties that live and shimmer and call to us beyond our conditioned and blinding expectations. Now, the last part of our reflection today is an invitation to everyone present, if you wish, to enter into a guided meditation intended to help us to see beyond the gender binary. So I invite you to close your eyes or at least turn your attention inward. Turn your attention to your inner vision. And place in your inner eye someone who you know and love. Let's consider for a moment the many variations of being that we connect to gender. And as I name these things, think of this person's, think of these qualities as they express themselves in the person that you're imagining.